Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number... I wonder what kind of trouble Trent Lott would be if he'd said that. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Bush is proceeding with his faith-based initiative. Now, I have faith. I'm a Christian. And, in fact, I pastor a church, Denver Bible Church. And this George W. Bush pushing for churches to get federal dollars to distribute via basically different kinds of welfare programs, if they're helping the needy, I wonder how much Denver Bible Church could get in a year. Maybe $80,000? $150,000? You know, some significant chunk to dole out to the needy to try to get more people through the door so they'd give more money in the collection plate. I guess that's the motivation of churches who support this. Now, as the pastor of Denver Bible Church, I wish I could get the ear of the conservative Republicans and tell them that conservative Christians are against welfare generally. Welfare is a bad idea when the government does it. It's a bad idea. And to get churches involved in distributing welfare is even worse. Churches are supposed to stand for that which is right, that which is good, that which is just. And it's not just for governments to tax people even higher than they otherwise need to in order to collect a pool of money that could be given to people for whatever. Food, clothing, shelter, health care, education, none of those things are the proper domain of governments. The government has two just functions, only two just functions, to defend people's rights against criminals, like to fight against murder, stealing, things like that, rape, and to provide for infrastructure like waterways, bridges, roads, things like that, things that private individuals cannot do. They don't have the authority. For example, private individuals would not have the authority to put a highway through a metropolitan area or around a metropolitan area. And they wouldn't necessarily have the authority to arrange for there to be a harbor with shipping lanes or to determine who is going to use what bandwidth in the airwaves, because there are certain shared resources that there needs to be some type of central administration. And so the government has the authority to do only those things which only the government can do, namely fight against criminals, a criminal justice system that also extends toward international criminals, foreign criminals, and enemy armies. So fighting against criminals and criminal tyrants or dictators with armies that might attack us or invade us. So basically the police, the judicial system, the military, and then infrastructure like roadways and airwaves and water rights, things like that the government should be able to handle disputes over. But then that's it. That's it. The government should not take care of people. The government should not raise kitties. It shouldn't change diapers. It shouldn't dish out breakfast and lunch. It should not do those things. When the government helps families raise kids. Now, if you're a liberal, try to think through this, all right? Just make an effort. The phone number is 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Try to think through what happens when the government says, we are going to provide breakfast for kids. See, first they provided lunches because, you know, a lot of parents didn't care enough about their kids to send them to school with a nutritious lunch. And the kids would have such a hard time paying attention in the afternoons. And so, therefore, we have to provide the kids with lunches. Now, at that point, what is the prediction that conservatives would make at that point? Well, based on human nature, whenever if you have a responsibility and someone else offers to take over that responsibility, human nature, normally people will relinquish responsibilities they have to others who are willing to do their work for them. So that if the government all of a sudden had a government program whereby you didn't have to change your own oil, a government worker would come around and make sure everyone's oil was changed every 3,000 miles in their cars. Well, then people would stop changing their own oil, and they would get rather adamant and make sure you get over here and make sure my car oil is changed on time. Thank you. And the same thing happens with raising kids. People have a responsibility and obligation to raise their kids, to provide for their kids. And when the government says, well, we're going to help feed your kids, then it's unavoidable that a significant number of parents will relinquish the responsibility to feed their own children to the government. And so the government is going to feed their kids lunch. And so this percentage of parents who will succumb to that kind of temptation, well, then they're not going to try real hard to give their kids a good breakfast because, after all, they're going to get a nutritious lunch anyway. So then after a certain amount of time, the well-meaning government bureaucrats who don't know right from wrong are going to say, you know, the kids are not getting nutritious breakfast at home either. We got to give them a good breakfast. And so they have a breakfast program and then a lunch program at your local government school. And the net result of all this is that it's destructive because it goes outside the bounds, the proper authority that government has. It's two just functions of criminal justice and infrastructure. It goes beyond that to welfare and taking care of people, taking care of family, taking care of children. When the government takes care of children, to the extent the government takes care of children, to a significant extent, parents relinquish their obligation to care for their kids. Let's go to Indianapolis. Jeff, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob.
Howdy.
My statement's a little bit off topic because I know what the Bible says on the subject.
All right, go ahead.
But it kind of goes along with what you're talking about, and what I'm interested in finding out is your opinion on the subject of these underage kids that are committing murders within our country and abroad, and then they're being tried as adults.
Yeah.
I was under the understanding that if a parent brings a child into the world, that they're responsible for that child and its actions.
All right, hold on. We'll be right back. Listener-supported radio right here, Bob and Yurt Live. Hi, I'm Bob, and I have the honor of being the pastor of Denver Bible Church. That's a place where we take the Bible seriously, as a lot of churches do. But, for example, when the Bible says if you don't work, you shouldn't eat, well, we take that seriously, and that, therefore, government welfare programs that encourage, they enable people who don't work to become full-time alcoholics or drug addicts, we see that those programs are destructive because they're inherently wrong, and as a result, we're against welfare for that reason and other reasons. Now, that's what you get at Denver Bible Church, not just the Sunday school class on forgiveness. Of course, no church does just that. But we take on the issues of the day, the controversial issues, and we apply not the cliches that Christians repeat all the time, that are actually, quite a few of them are somewhat sickening and extremely liberal, but we apply the things that the Bible actually says and talks about, like judging criminals and executing capital criminals. That's what we do on this show, Bob and Yurt Live. We can't do it on our own. We can't fund it on our own. We need your help. If you appreciate the show, well, then please give us a call, 1-800-8-NYART, and you could either make a monthly pledge to help us pay for the airtime in Denver and the other cities that we're on. Or you can purchase some of our materials, audio tapes, videotapes, the plot manuscript, the overview of the whole Bible. In fact, we have a Christmas package for $59.95. You get to pick videos, audio tape, the plot. So give us a call, 1-888-836-9278. Did I just say 888? Did I just say 888? 1-888. It's either 1-800-8-NYART or 1-888-8-NYART. We don't care. Dial 1-800 or 1-888. Just exit Medved Chevrolet. Oop, wrong commercial. Sorry. Either way you dial, it'll ring into our studios at night, into the office during the day, 1-800-836-9278. And we do have a Christmas special, and it's quite a significant cut in price. Quite a price. What is it, $59.95 for four videos? That'll save you $20 to $40. For three albums, that'll save you $30. And for the plot and any other item, that could save you $20, $25. So give us a call. Order quick. Welcome back to Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-836-9278. Our crack engineering staff on duty. Bob and Yurt Live, and we're back in Indiana with Jeff. So, Jeff, you want to ask about juveniles who commit crimes and then are tried as adults?
Yeah, my question is, I'm wondering where your position is concerning the parents being held responsible for the actions of these underage children. I think that if we were to tell these kids, we're not going to punish you as an adult, however, you will become a ward of the state because we're going to take your parents and hang them in the, the public square because obviously they taught you wrong. And
are you speaking figuratively or literally?
No, I'm thinking literally. I mean, somebody's got to pay for the capital crime.
All right. Okay. Okay, now let me ask you this. Obviously, you want to be a strong law and order type, and you want to use principles to apply the correct punishment to the crime.
Without question.
Yeah, okay, and I appreciate that. Not everybody wants that. A lot of people want to make all kinds of excuses for criminals and pretty much just love and understand them. And that's been tried, and it doesn't work.
Well, in my opinion, and I believe that this is biblical too, I can't prove it to you scripture 100% because it doesn't say that you must do this, but God says that we're to obey every ordinance of man. And we as Christians are forgetting that the very first ordinance that was laid down is that this is a government of the people,
for
the people, by the people.
Jeff,
and we are to be involved in government.
All right, you're giving me too many things to deal with in one call. There's a few things you dealt with. Now, I'm tempted to take them backwards, but let me skip to the middle one first. That we're to obey every ordinance of man, of the government. Are there many great men of faith in the Bible who intentionally disobeyed the governing authorities, the government, and they were blessed by God in their disobedience?
I would agree with that. And we are to disobey the laws that are against God's law.
Well, if any law is a bad law, like when the Germans told government workers that they should kill Jews, men, women, and children, whole families, kill them because they're Jewish, the governing workers should have disobeyed the governing authority. They should disobey. So you should disobey the government if the government ever tells you to do something that's wrong.
Well, but there is a story in the Bible that talks about Paul and how he went about killing Christians because it was the law and he had authority to do so.
It wasn't the law. He didn't have authority to do so.
He said that he did from his elders, and he was persecuting the Church of Christ.
He had the authority from the council to arrest Christians.
Well, obviously, that's not God's law. That is definitely traditional Jewish implementation.
The Jews.
But nonetheless, obeyed that from
Jeff,
the synagogue.
Jeff, let's finish this part, this clarification I'd like to make.
Okay.
The Romans had taken away from the Jews the authority to sentence anyone to death. The Jews did not have that authority. They should have had it because the Romans had no right to occupy Palestine. So the Jews, like any nation, should have the right to inflict the death penalty on a convicted capital criminal. But the Romans took that authority away, along with the freedom and independence of Israel, and they kept that authority for themselves. So the Jews did not exercise any type of capital crime apart from the Roman governor in Jerusalem, which at the time was Pontius Pilate. And so when the Jews, with Paul helping, when they killed Stephen in the book of Acts, chapter 7, they killed Stephen. That was a crime at the time. Paul, when he said he had authority to arrest Christians. Yes, the Romans allowed the Jews that kind of authority, but he never said he had the authority to kill them.
Paul was a Roman citizen, though.
Well, that's beside the point. The governor in Jerusalem, Pilate, did not delegate Paul with the authority to kill Christians on sight. Paul did not have that kind of authority. Rome would not give that kind of authority to the Jews. There's no way. And they didn't. But what Paul said he had the authority to do from the chief priest, from the council, was to arrest Christians. And yes, he did have that authority. But when he was an accomplice in murdering Stephen, he was just your common murderer. Does that make sense or no?
It does make sense. And okay. It is a perfect picture of God's grace.
Well, yeah, God forgives people who hurt other people when they ask to be forgiven.
I often thought about Paul sitting across the table at some church dinner from Stephen's wife and wondered how things went.
Very good point. Only Stephen didn't have a wife, I don't think.
But he had to. He was an elder.
I think the seven elders appointed in Acts didn't have wives, weren't they? Or maybe I'm wrong on that. But anyway, Jeff, now to another point. So anyway, we're supposed to obey the governing authorities, but not when the laws are immoral.
I agree with you.
Then we're supposed to disobey. Now, as to juvenile justice, all right?
Okay.
If you go through the Bible and you collect all the statements on criminal justice and you compile them into a syllabus or a seminar, like we've done, God's Criminal Justice Seminar, we've done it all over the country. And we've had input from judges and investigators, detectives, cops, sheriffs, county sheriffs, just a great amount of input from people saying, thank you for doing this, because finally there's some kind of rationality in the criminal justice system. So God, in the Bible, for example, he says, if someone commits the crime of perjury, the punishment should be whatever is at stake in the trial. So if you commit perjury in a case where somebody stole $50 and what's at stake is paying restitution, then the perjurer should pay restitution, the equivalent amount of whatever's at stake in the trial. And if the punishment is a flogging of 10 lashes, then whoever commits perjury in that case gets 10 lashes. And if it's a murder case or a kidnapping case and the punishment is death, then the perjurer who's lying and saying so-and-so committed the murder or so-and-so did not commit the murder, I was there, and then you could prove the perjurer is lying, then he should be put to death. So that's an example of how reasonable God's criminal justice system is.
Good luck getting our liberals to go along with that.
Yeah, I don't think they will. But let me ask you, your initial question implied that you believe there should be a juvenile court system with juvenile laws that are different from the rest of the laws.
I'm sorry to have implied that. I don't believe that the juvenile laws should be different from regular laws, but at the same time, these juveniles that are committing the crimes, because they're juvenile, they don't think that their actions hurt anybody but themselves.
All right. Well, let's stick with the first part first, that there should not be. There's no valid reason. There's no justification. Certainly, there is no biblical support for giving different punishments to teenagers, for example, who commit crimes. And based on what we know of human nature, if you lower the punishment for crimes for teenagers, you're lowering the threshold for the teenagers to commit the crimes.
I don't think that having the parents pay for the crime and having that child become a ward of the state is lessening punishment for the crime.
Well, you're being creative with those two suggestions. God spends a lot of time in the Bible laying out a criminal justice system. Here are the laws. Here are the punishments. Here's the admissibility of evidence. Here's the qualification for judges. Here's the appellate process. Here's the standard you need for conviction. God does all that in the Bible, and never once does he say the things that you're recommending. And so I think that you're on solid ground when you recognize that if someone murders another person, that person, when convicted, should be executed. And the age is irrelevant. And instead of lowering the threshold for a 15-year-old who finds out he could kill his girlfriend because now she's with another guy, and he won't be executed because he's just a kid, he could sort of get away with it. He might not even have parents. He might hate his parents. And so you've lowered the threshold of the death penalty for every murderer because you want to try something creative. You think it might work better. But God is the creator. And when it comes to law, even God is not creative because laws should not be created. They exist. They should just be discovered and they should be declared. So
exercised.
Yeah. So the penalty for murder is you get put to death. And if you say to kids, well, we're not going to put you to death because you're too young, you lower the threshold for children to become murderers.
Well, in that case, a disobedient child is to be put to death.
Okay. In the Mosaic Law, there are laws for Israel that deal with Israel's covenant relationship with God.
Is that not part of the governmental institution that God implemented?
Well, there are laws in the Bible that deal with Israel's covenant relationship with God. And then there are laws that are universal, that apply to all men everywhere. So that, for example, that you can only eat certain kinds of meat and you can't wear clothing with mixed fabrics. Those are symbolic laws. Circumcision and the Sabbath, God calls all of those laws symbolic so that people in America, if they violate those symbolic laws, it's irrelevant and the government should have nothing to do with that. That's a purely religious, ceremonial, symbolic issue. Whereas when God in the Mosaic Law said, don't murder, if you do, you should be executed. Don't steal, if you do, you pay restitution. Don't assault someone. If you do, you should be flogged. Those laws are fundamental criminal laws that apply to all people at all times under all governments. And so when you know that distinction is in the Mosaic Law, most Christians don't study the Bible enough to know that there's a distinction between fundamental criminal law and symbolic law. And many of the laws are symbolic concerning God's covenant with Israel. We'll be right back. Hey, let's talk about the Christmas pack. If you'd like to get a Christmas present for yourself or someone else, for $59.95, this is what you can choose. Any four videos. And four videos, most of our videos are $20. That would be normally $80. But some of them are $25 because they're better production, more dramatic, greater demand. you know, supply and demand, how that all works. And so for $59.95, you could get any four videos, which are worth a minimum of $80 or as much as $100. Or you can get any three audio albums. And the average audio album is $32.95. So that's $99. So there also you can save $40 or even more because a couple of the albums are more expensive. Or you can get the plot and any other item. So the plot itself is $49.95, and a video is $20 or $25, and an audio tape album is $30 or more. So you could save quite a bit getting a plot and an album, a plot and a video, plot and a ShadowGov t-shirt. That'll work, right? We'll give a ShadowGov t-shirt. Yeah, so $59.95 for a Christmas pack, that's a significant savings. And not only that, at Christmas time, that's when money flowing into religious programs, Bible study, ministries, when the money tightens up, of course, because people have more demands on their cash. For one, they go through the expense of a Christmas tree or gifts and holiday parties or traveling. And it just costs more money during Christmas time. And so ministries, now Bob Inert Live is not an official IRS nonprofit charity. We're not that because we talk about politics all the time. But Denver Bible Church is a nonprofit. And if people donate to Denver Bible Church, they get a discount. What? They get to take it off their taxes. That's what I meant to say. But if you give money to Bob Inert Live, Bob Inert Live is a talk show. The IRS does not recognize us as a charity because we're pretty hardcore politically. We'll tell you when a candidate is wrong and when a ballot initiative is wrong. So because of that, you can't take a tax deduction when you donate. But then again, you could donate or just purchase these materials, and this is a great price. We're back. Bob Inert Live, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. So, hey, Jeff, have you ever had a conversation with someone where you were distinguishing between the criminal code in the Mosaic Law and the symbolic ordinances?
Yeah, we've discussed many different things. People in my church, people on the street, I go soul winning. I'm a street preacher, so I have the opportunity to talk about the differences between them.
In the Mosaic Law, there's the criminal code, and then there are the symbolic ordinances. God had a special covenant relationship with Israel. And in that relationship, at least this is the story of the Bible. Not everybody believes the Bible is true. I've looked at the evidence and I'm persuaded historically it's true and that the God of the Bible does exist. And that God went into a special covenant relationship with Israel wherein he only allowed one religion in the nation of Israel. You could only have a biblical Judaism. That was it. There was no right to worship any other god. You couldn't promote any other god. Now, God never imposed that kind of law on the Gentile nations. However, on the Gentile nations was do not murder, do not steal, do not commit adultery, don't kidnap. Because these laws God wrote in their hearts, and they're inherently criminal. Whereas if somebody covets, right, the Ten Commandments say don't covet. So don't lust. Don't lust after somebody else's money and wishing it were your money. But that's not a crime that the government should enforce. If you have lust in your heart, that's irrelevant to government functioning. That's between you and God. And so many of the laws that God revealed through Moses were symbolic for Israel in their covenant relationship with God. And those laws did not apply to the rest of the nations of the world. And if God ever were to cut off Israel, then those laws would no longer be applicable, unless perhaps he grafted them back in again, and then they would become applicable again. So that's why at Denver Bible Church, we're theonomists. We say that the laws of the land should be based on God's law in the Bible, but only on the criminal laws, taking away all those laws that are based to illustrate, to reinforce God's covenant with Israel. So that's how we look at the laws written by Moses, and we can decide very clearly what is valid as a law today and what is not.
So you believe that the Ten Commandments, as written in the Holy Bible, not all of them are criminal code.
Definitely. Only four of them are criminal code. The God in the Ten Commandments laid down the foundation of a criminal code in these four commands. Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, and thou shalt not commit perjury. Those four laws, perjury lays out that you need a just criminal system, due process, thou shalt not commit perjury, and theft of all types, socialism, communism, welfare, and just your basic theft. Thou shalt not steal. Adultery, no one has the right to seduce your neighbor's wife. And when you legalize adultery, which crime was, that was against the law for 3,500 years, adultery was a crime. When this country was founded, when we were way more conservative and we didn't have socialism, adultery was a crime. And when the divorce rate hadn't passed 50%, adultery was a crime. And do not murder. So the Ten Commandments have the foundation of the criminal code. However, when the Ten Commandments say don't covet, don't lust after your neighbor's goods, that should not be part of the criminal code. That's a sin, but it's not a crime.
Well, just like in the second commandment, thou shalt not have any graven images.
Right.
At points in history, that was a crime as well.
Well, that should have only been a crime enforceable by government in Israel during God's covenant relationship with them, because God had this very unique relationship with this one nation, and they did not have the right on earth to dismiss him and build temples to other gods. They couldn't do that in Israel. They could cross the border and they could do that in Moab or Ammon or Egypt, but not in Israel.
Okay, I understand all that. It makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this comes back to our current government.
Right.
For instance, when 9/11 happened, we mm-hmm. saw all the senators and congressmen up singing God Bless America.
Right.
And the Bible's very clear about those whom have God on their lips but not in their hearts.
Oh, amen.
The highest form of forsaking God.
Yeah, they were singing condemnation to themselves. You know, there's never an atheist in a foxhole. And when they were afraid that a nuke could be exploded somewhere within a few miles of the Capitol, you know, people turned to God. Not everybody, but most people in times of severe crisis turn to God. Even our godless government, Hollywood, our culture thinks about God in times of crisis. And no matter how much liberals hate that, they're never going to be able to change it. And it is hypocrisy. You're right. And they were singing condemnation to themselves because they don't give a rip about God, except when they think it'll help them. He'll help them get elected. And they'll say, God bless America on the campaign trail. That's like Al Gore. You remember Al Gore and his acceptance speech when he declared he's running for president? And he said his favorite Bible verse was John 16:3.
Yeah.
And John, what he meant was from Monday Night Football, he meant John 3:16.
I know.
But he accidentally said John 16:3. And let me read that one to you.
Uh-oh, warning.
Warning, warning, warning. Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we here at Bob and Your Live know that you would silence anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. This warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. All right, John chapter 16, verse 3, Jesus said, "In these things they will do to you, because they have not known the Father nor me." In other words, they're going to really rip you off, and they're going to run roughshod over you because they don't know me, the true God. And so Al Gore says, this is my favorite Bible verse. This is what I'm going to do to the people if they elect me. That's so ironic.
Thank God we didn't elect him.
Well, yeah. I'm not all that excited with our political parties, no matter
how
things
go. Again, that brings me right back to we as Christians need to be involved. We're supposed to be directing these folks. God expects us to be leaders.
Well, so let me ask you this. Is welfare inherently a good and just idea, or is it inherently immoral?
It's entirely wicked.
Yeah, welfare is destructive. In every country that embraces it, they destroy a significant number of people who are on welfare. You know, the wealthy can afford the paycheck deductions to pay for welfare. The poor who are on welfare are the ones who really pay the price. They're the ones who can't afford it. Millions of poor people have had their lives destroyed by welfare. Welfare does not work. Look at Africa. Look at the Soviet Union. Look at China. Look at Cuba. Welfare is a disaster. And so George W. Bush, who, you know, he's supposed to be a strong Christian, and he wants to change welfare now to have the churches be the middlemen and distribute the welfare. Now, that's like saying, well, prostitution is bad, but if the prostitutes give 10% to the churches, then they can advertise in the church bulletins. I mean, it's completely hypocritical. It's wrong. It's destructive. Most Christian denominations wouldn't know the Bible from the Quran, and they don't know that welfare is wrong. And so they're all for this because they think they'll get millions of dollars in tax money back to dole out to people to entice more people to come to church. So I'm disgusted with George W. Bush and the conservatives around him who are telling him that church welfare is a good thing. It's a wicked thing. Why don't we do abortions in each church? Because, hey, you might as well go to the church where you're going to have emotional problems afterward. So why doesn't Bush say we're going to have church-based abortion mills? It's just disgusting. I'm pretty angry with him.
Yeah, I'm not too pleased with how George Bush is acting as well. I'm hoping to see some light change around the corner. I think it's good news that we as a country have finally voted against Israel revoking the Jerusalem law in the United Nations. It's the first time that we've not abstained in many years.
Well, you're really dropping little bomblets on us here, Jeff, but I think we did enough for today, so thank you. Hey, commercial break. Bob Inyard here. All right, so that was fun. You know, that was fun. We sort of beat that topic to death. We haven't had the opportunity to beat a murderer to death in a long, long time. Sometimes inmates get that opportunity. They sort of rob us Christians of the opportunity to beat a convicted murderer to death. But I think we beat the topic to death. We covered that reasonably well. And hopefully, you know, on Bob and Yurt Live, the goal of the show, let's say when we debated a Mormon the previous show and a couple weeks ago, we debate a Mormon, and what is the likelihood that we're going to convince the Mormon, this guy was an ex-Mormon, but he still believes in the Book of Mormon, what's the likelihood that we're going to get him to change his mind and repudiate Joseph Smith and become a Christian? You know, the likelihood is way less than 1/100 of 1%. It's very unlikely. Very unlikely. One out of 10,000 times somebody does a good job debating a Mormon and they convert the Mormon. It's very rare. So we don't go into that with an expectation. We don't go into that with an expectation that we're going to turn him around. But our goal, if that happened, that'd be great. But the goal is to help the audience see that the Christian perspective is right and that the Christians have the answers, that we could defend our position, and that those against us are wrong and they cannot defend their position convincingly. They can't do it. Not with someone who's ready to give an answer to defend the truths in the Bible. Whether if it's the atheist, he will lose. Or the evolutionist, he will lose. Or the cultist, he will lose. Right? The socialist will lose. The humanist will lose the debate. The environmentalist will lose. Because he worships dirt and trees and bugs. And God said we're to worship only the Creator, not the creation. And he made man to have dominion over the earth. So the environmentalist position puts God below the dirt and men below the dirt, but above God, and then the dirt. So it's easy to beat them. Bob Enyart, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Have you ever read Atlas Shrugged? Atlas Shrugged. If you haven't read it, don't read it. We'll save you the time. It's a great novel, but, you know, you could understand the concept in about 5 minutes instead of reading a 1,000-page novel. But Ayn Rand hated Christianity not because of what the Bible says. She hated Christianity because of what many Christians say. Because Christians, many liberal Christians, are pro-welfare. And, you know, if people are hungry, you got to feed them. You got to give them money and shelter and clothing and health care and food, because otherwise they'll get cold or hungry. And what Ayn Rand, who hated God, but she grew up behind the Iron Curtain, and she was able to observe objectively and say, you know, the more we give to people who don't earn what we're giving them, the worse off they become. Welfare, socialism, communism, it hurts people. It doesn't help them. It doesn't elevate them. It pushes them down even further, and they get lazier. And they lose whatever meager self-respect they had to start with. And you ruin their lives. And you also discourage the real producers and the people who work hard. You discourage them. And so they do less work. And generally, everyone's standard of living is decreased in a socialist or communist economy. And so Ayn Rand associated welfare with Christianity. She thought welfare was a part of the teaching of the Bible. And she didn't know, because Christians tend to be weak and wimpy, she didn't know that the Bible, the Apostle Paul, said that it was a command. If someone will not work, he shall not eat. That's a command from God. If someone will not work, he shall not eat. So if you're feeding a homeless guy who refuses to work because he'd rather be drunk all night and sleep off his hangover all day, and he doesn't want to work, and he's a drug addict or an alcoholic, he's a professional homeless, and he just doesn't want to work because he prefers to live on the street. If you feed him, you are sinning. You are sinning. And if you help to destroy him, then his blood is on your hands, because you helped to kill him on the installment plan. just like welfare has done to countless people. You know, Africa, the standard of living in Africa was steadily increasing. Through the whole colonial period, the standard of living was increasing dramatically throughout Africa until Africa became the target of the liberal West with billions of dollars a year in welfare payments, totaling over $1 trillion given to Africa, and we've destroyed the economy of an entire continent. And we've robbed millions of black people of self-respect and dignity because in Somalia, when Jack Fish, that idiot Board of Ed member from Brighton, Colorado, the columnist who said the reason there was starvation in Somalia was because of overpopulation, and Somalia they have less than 30 people per square mile. Rhode Island has 850 people per square mile. England has 600. Germany has 850 people per square mile. And Somalia at 30 people per square mile and they have overpopulation? That's not why Somalia has famine. Somalia has famine because of welfare, because according to the Rocky Mountain News article at the time, written by Holger Smith, their foreign affairs writer, the number one industry in Somalia was the distribution of welfare. That was their number one industry. That's why they had famine, because they were seduced by well-meaning liberals. I don't even know if they're all that well-meaning. If they're well-meaning and they're still pro-welfare, then they've got to be stupid. So they're either stupid liberals or smart and ill will. Because of some political agenda. They don't care if the welfare billions destroy millions of lives. They've got a political agenda. Let's go to the phones in Littleton, Colorado. Rich,
hello.
Speak. Hi, Rich. Welcome.
Hi.
Welcome, Rich.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Doing well.
You know, I was on the other line. I hope I didn't put you off. But no. I was going to make a comment. If Bush was to denounce welfare altogether, wouldn't that be political suicide on his part?
Well, let's say he didn't let me postpone answering that for a second. Let's say he didn't have the courage to say welfare is wrong. That's one thing. But then to commit the proactive sin of trying to seduce the churches into becoming welfare distributors, that goes beyond just the lack of courage into out-and-out wickedness.
Now, what would happen? Now, in the Bible, the churches are supposed to be in charge of the charities, right?
Wrong.
I thought the church was supposed to be the charitable denomination.
Well, let me ask you a question.
The government wasn't supposed to provide that.
No, the government shouldn't do it, and the Bible restricts the church from giving out charity for the most part. For example, let's say there's let's say there's a woman who she's in her late 50s. Her husband died. She has a couple teenage kids, and she can't afford to pay the rent.
Right.
Should the local church help her out on a monthly basis financially?
You mean as far as like
that would be welfare,
grave or
helping her pay the rent?
I could see helping her come up with the rent. It would depend on the situation. I mean, if she was just all of a sudden widowed and she had, the husband didn't have any insurance or whatever, helping her get into a different situation I think would be a Christian thing to do.
Okay. Now, hopefully you're not the pastor of an elder of a church, Rich.
Nope.
Because if you were in charge of a church and there was a woman, as I described, and you used the church money to help her out each month, you would be sinning. Because God lays out, for example, in the New Testament, in 1 Timothy chapter 4, God says that the church, through this book here, 1 Timothy, the church should almost never help a woman like that. In fact, if a woman is a widow, the vast majority of widows the church should not support. And, for example, if she has children or grandchildren, and the church supports her, then her own family members will not support her because the church has.
I understand that perfectly.
And the church, the well-meaning but ignorant church will help to destroy her family. And if she's under 60 years old, the Bible says the church should not help her. And if she did not have a good reputation as an honorable woman through her life, the church should not help her. So only in the most rare exceptions of a woman who's basically been a supporter and a worker of the church for her whole life, and she has no children, no grandchildren, and she's over 60 years of age, which back 2,000 years ago, people didn't live beyond 60 very often. So today, that would be like 80. So God, through the Bible, says that welfare basically is destructive, and he disallows churches from even helping widows under most circumstances.
Okay, under the circumstances that you explained, I could see that.
Yeah.
But if there is no family and the family's not helping out, then...
No, not if the family's not helping out.
Huh?
If the family is not helping out, you don't help the widow. Because what you do is you help to destroy her children. It's better for her to be destitute and her children condemned by their lack of love for their mother than for you to be an enabler to help send her children to hell. If you help a widow who has kids...
That was 1 Timothy, what, chapter
4? Chapter 4, verses 3 through the next 10 verses or so. Verse 9 says, do not let a widow under 60 years old receive this kind of monthly support.
Uh-huh.
And verse 4 says, if any widow has children or grandchildren, they let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents. For this is good and acceptable before God. But if the church helps the widow, then you could bet your bottom dollar that her kids are not going to cough up $500 a month if the church is.
Right.
The same thing is true with food stamps. If you've got a sister whose husband is a loser and he's not going to work and she can't feed her kids and the government provides food stamps, then that enables the husband to remain a loser.
Well, I totally agree with that.
I mean,
the welfare system actually forces separation of marriage.
Right. Welfare
so that they can qualify for benefits.
Right. Welfare destroys families, and church welfare destroys families too. Only in the most narrow circumstances does God allow churches to use their money to help the needy. Only in rare circumstances, for things like floods and earthquakes and, you know, circumstances that are temporary. But ongoing support, you destroy the people you help in that way.
I wouldn't say ongoing support.
Right. Well, then you'd be right. Temporary, but even the temporary support. If a widow only needs support for 2 months, if ever her kids are going to help her, it's then. And if you step in at the moment of crisis to give help because it makes you feel better, but eternally it destroys that woman's family, you haven't helped her. You hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Rich, we're out of time. We got the music.
All right. I'll let you go, Bob.
God bless you. I appreciate the call. There's real good reasons that the Bible is harsh on those who would give and disobey God and give to the needy, because it's the ultimate lust of the flesh. It makes you feel good. If you're hurting the person you're giving money to, well, you don't really care about that person. You just want to feel good. And it makes you feel good right now. This is Bob Bednar reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. Right.